You see, nowadays, with cell phones have actually standardized the clock. You can't rock up and say, no, according to my watch, I'm still 5 minutes too. And another one saying, no, according to mine, it's 2 minutes. And another one's, mentioning a different time. So if it is 8 o'clock, it's 8 o'clock. If you're an eight, you're an eight. You have no excuse. You can't say, no, I thought it was this time because this is what my watch was telling me. Right. The time now is 2 minutes past 8. Colleagues, Brian, can you upload the program for today? Sorry, the agenda.
Yes, sir.
Did you bring us a cake?
Not this time around.
Okay. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much, Honorable Marais and everybody. Thank you very much.
You've got a wonderful day and a blessed Christmas. My goodness. That's good to hear.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. All right. Colleagues, this is the agenda for today. We have until 9:50 because the house starts at 10. We have only three items in the main. It's the consideration of the DOD, DMV, and entities, Arms Corps and CCB, reports. And then we have the report. I'm taking charge on this one. I hope you agree if you have read it. The consideration and adoption of the report on the engagement with the Khoisan Nation self-defense unit and the SACC MVA and the enclosure. And I want Brian to add the framework program for the first term. We don't have the program as yet, but we're just fleshing the items and with the intention of inviting your colleagues to add more items. And once we have all the items, we'll then blend them, programatize them. And okay, so this is the agenda for today. Colleagues, you are all welcome. Let me just check. Brian, are we correct?
Yes, sir, indeed we are.
We are. Okay. Welcome, colleagues, without wasting time. And let me invite the team to take us through the presentation on the BRRR. So we'll start with DOD. Thank you very much for the team for working like a clock to produce the reports.
Good morning, Chair. I'm just going to upload the DOD BRRR just a second.
Okay.
Chair, please tell me if it's visible on your side.
Yes, it is visible. But just make it a single slide to light it so that and eliminate that on the or there.
Okay. Chair, I don't know how you want us to go through this, perhaps there's your guidance, but what we thought we'd do is go through the committee observations and recommendations, but the report is based on the preliminary BRRR that the committee adopted at the report already. So for ease of going through this, we highlighted the new additions in yellow, but if you would like to, we can go through all the observations and recommendations again and speak to the yellow ones, or we can just go through the new additions.
Colleagues, let's go through the new additions, but I will open the discussions on all of them.
Okay, Chair. Just on the DOD then, just before I get to the observations, we included an additional section on the findings, just a broad outline of the findings by the Auditor General, as he spoke about to the committee. The point of this was because it was not included in the preliminary BRRR because we did not have the AG's input at that stage. But then to go through the observations, they were quite a number during the initial BRRR. Additional aspects that we include, the first one relates to the Eastern Navy's project Biro Natal. Now, there was a regional observation in this regard, but we extended it after last night's discussion. So the first one in yellow there is members expressed concern, this is an observation now, members expressed concern around the funding to finalize the SA Navy's project Biro and Natal, and that such funding will now be dependent on savings in other projects. I think that became clear last night. Members further expressed the need for the projects to remain funded and be finalized as contracted to avoid penalties being imposed and irregular expenditure being incurred. Both these projects are central to the maintenance of integrity of South Africa's territorial waters, which is closely linked to the constitutional mandate of the SANF to protect the country's territorial integrity. Maritime patrol capabilities are required to ensure effective control of South Africa's waters, prevent crime at sea, and protect natural resources. Two bullets down, there was an observation around the slow finalization of disciplinary cases, and this was again raised last night, and we just added to that section saying this relates to directly to the lack of consequence management as a concern raised by the AG. On the next page, there's four extra bullets that emerged from last night's engagement. Firstly, the observation, given the urgent need for the DOD to develop means of generating additional revenue, the committee expressed concern around the fact that, at least for the past two financial years, an auctioneer has not been appointed to ensure the auctioning of redundant and obsolete equipment. The next one, members noted the rapid decline in the SDA and the impact this will have on the DOD's ability to facilitate capital acquisition. The committee also noted the indication by the DOD's CFO that negotiations with National Treasury on the feasibility of maintaining the SDA is ongoing. Thirdly, members raised questions around the affordability of South Africa's 44 military attachés and inquired about the value that they are adding. Lastly, the committee noted the AG's observation that SEM function does not resort under the CFO as required by the PMA, nor does the risk management function. In this regard, the committee took note of the Secretary for Defense's statement that they are working to realign the DOD's procurement environment and risk management function to ensure that supply chain management and risk management resort under the control of the CFO as required by the PFMA. The realignment initiatives are crucial to the effective and efficient management of the DOD. So, Chair and members, what we did is to translate some of these into additional recommendations. The first one related to an existing observation, and this is just to ease the engagement of the committee in the first quarter of next year regarding the compensation of employees discussion. This is specifically a recommendation to the Minister of Finance, that says the Minister of finance should indicate to the committee's willingness to fund, in addition to the DoD's allocation, a workable and humane exit mechanism for personnel over the medium term. This would assist the committee in its planned engagement with the DoD going forward. Furthermore, stemming from last night's discussions, the DoD should brief the committee on a quarterly basis on the status and status of funding for projects Spiro and Hotel, including from which other capital acquisition projects funds were and will be moved to pay for these projects. There is a similar recommendation in the Arms Corps BRRR that we will get to in a bit, but this is with specific reference to the DoD that indicate that they will use funds from other projects. On the next page, around risk management, measures to return the DoD to a level 5 enterprise risk management maturity level rating in 2020-21 should be implemented. Progress in this regard should be presented to the committee on a quarterly basis. Then three more new additional recommendations. At the end there, the DoD should urgently appoint new auctioneers to ensure that revenue can be generated from the sale of approved obsolete assets. While the committee understands the project SADO is ongoing to realize the utilization of old vehicles, auction of equipment that were already found to be unserviceable to proceed without delay, as the committee was informed that some of these vehicles dated back from the 1980s. The second last bullet there, the committee encourages the Minister of Defense to speed up plans to generate revenue for the DoD, and quarterly updates on progress in this regard should be provided to the committee. This relates specifically to discussions around the spending of assets. Lastly, the committee urges the DoD to ensure that supply chain management and risk management functions are realigned to resort under the control of the CFO. Chair, those are the additional recommendations and observations stemming from last night's engagement.
All right. Colleagues, here we see is that the additional items arising from our engagement last night. Yes, Mr. Murray.
Chairperson, excellently done. Again, you know, Gulharam and Peter has done an exceptional job, and I think I couldn't find any of the important stuff that I've mentioned and I've noted what you and the other members have mentioned that is not captured there. So excellent, and I've got absolutely no problem in proposing the acceptance of this report. I take pride in that.
Okay. And any other? You see, the comment from me, it's supply chain. It's fine if it results under the control of the CFO because it's procurement.
Yeah.
And but the risk, I remember the comment made by the Office of the Auditor General that says internal audit should be risk-based, and suggesting that the risk and the internal audit go together, and they both report to the accounting officer. And so if you could just split those two, currently risk management is under the planning section, not directly under the accounting office. That's the reason why we had these challenges that resulted in irregular expenditure going up and other risk issues not being sufficiently prosecuted within the department. It's because of its location. And I don't know, can you just rephrase that one, both in the observation and recommendation? Is it clear, Madam?
Chair, yes, just to confirm, so the supply chain management under the control of the CFO and risk management to resort under the officer.
I think that's also absolutely relevant, Chairperson, from my point of view, because you have to keep the risk slightly out of the risk assessment, out of the CFO, because that's where the risk is. But I agree with your point also that if you leave the CFO out, then suddenly, you know, it is two centers of power. And I agree with you fully on your observation and points in that regard.
All right. Colleagues, are we all, I mean, let me just check if all the matters we raised and have in fact been covered in the record. Mr. Mafanya, are you covered? There is a point you raised that I said we'll pick it up in the new year. And has it been covered in the report?
Oh, they did, sir. Thank you.
They did. Oh, thank you very much. Yes. I deliberately deferred discussions because the PRRR will incorporate, reflect those issues for EDM monitoring next year. All right, colleagues, I'm happy with the thing. We can then conclude. And can I put it? Can I put it for adoption? It's proposed by Mr. Mare, seconded by.
Modise, second, please.
Modise, second. Good morning, Miss Modise.
Morning, sir.
Good, thank you so much. Right, thank you so much.
It's again me and the ladies.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll be in Mr. Motomai's good books. All right. Very good. Let's go to the next report. Which one is this? Is your DFV? Yes. Can you hear me, Chair? Yes, I can.
Yeah. Chair, can you see the presentation?
Yes, I can see it.
Yes, Chair. As what the alarm was saying, twice we've talked to the DMV. The first time we discussed the preliminary meeting.
Are the dogs in the meeting? Continue.
That's my last case today. That's my voice. Sorry for that, Chief. Yeah, so I'm just saying that the first time we discussed the DVVRRR was on the 17th of October. It was at the second day of the Lekotla. And then the 25th of October, we actually discussed the actual DMV VRRR or the annual report when they presented it to us. So, see if I can take members to page 14. There is basically just the observation that we've made. And there at the bottom of the page, there are the new observations. And I think the first one related to the accessibility to sick base and military hospital for military veterans. especially those residing in rural areas or far from these facilities, and whether they could utilize the nearest public and or private hospitals based on referrals from doctors and sick base. It was explained to us that it's difficult to arrange preferential treatment for military veterans at public facilities due to the oath and ethical considerations applied to doctors. Military veterans are also reluctant to go to public health facilities. The second observation there, Gail, the committee raised concern that of the AG that if the claims against the department were to be realized, they would amount to around 55% of the DMV's annual allocation and requested more clarity on the issues. It was indicated that many of the claims relate to medical expenses and that SAMS has been dealing with it. The department is also very positive that they can successfully defend other claims, especially the case related to the ZEAL contract. The committee inquired around the process of prioritizing houses or housing for military veterans as announced by the National Department of Human Settlement, Water and Sanitation, which created expectations from military veterans that they will soon be assisted in this regard. It was explained that part of the challenges is the reluctance in brackets from provincial housing departments to request funding or top up for housing for military veterans, and that they are investigating with measures to address the situation. The last observation there again, the illegal occupation of houses built to shelter military veterans was very concerning to the committee, and it requested more information in this regard. The DM responded that access to houses are gained by getting the keys to the houses at a specific site by force after which occupation takes place. The department has quarterly meetings with the relevant national and provincial stakeholders to address the situation, as well as allocating sites to military veterans who then follow the building of the houses and in this manner try and prevent illegal occupation. Now, the related recommendations with regards to the new observations, they chair just at the bottom of page 60. Firstly, the committee recommends that the issue of access to nearby public and private hospitals via sick base and military hospitals should be announced, especially the speeding up of processes to authorize treatment for specialized services based on referrals by military health practitioners. Now, the committee recommended that the department should, on a quarterly basis, inform it of the status of the legal claims against the department, including the fiscal implication of each claim. It was recommended that the DMV should keep the committee abreast on the measures to speed up housing for military veterans against the background that there appears to be a lack of eagerness on the part of provincial housing departments to request such funding from the DMV. And then the last one in. And given the committee's concern around the illegal occupation of houses earmarked for military veterans, it was stressed. The committee stressed the importance of addressing this situation and expect quarterly feedback in this regard. Those are the new observations and recommendations here.
Okay. All right, colleagues. Just go to K. So you're on K. You're on K there on the recommendations. Especially the speeding up of the process to authorize treatment for specialized services based on referrals. Okay, that's fine. Okay, colleagues, any comment? Let me just check if there are hands. I don't see any hand. Colleagues, are there any comments on this?
Chairperson, I'm sure other members are trying to say something, but from my side, it seems like Peter has done an exceptional job.
Yes. Okay, thanks. I see Schellenberg's hand.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think one must appreciate, the work has been prepared for us here, that report. Well, I mean, it is covering a lot, I mean, on those special, I mean, when it comes to, I mean, the hospital. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. The only thing that, Chairperson, I don't know how it can be put in. You know, the issue of, I mean, communication between the military veterans and the department, that's very, very, very poor when it comes to, I mean, emails being sent, and it takes more time than as regulated, I mean, in the, what you call it, the benefits regulations. So I don't know how can we put that, because if that communication is not improved, we'll keep, I mean, getting the concerns. Well, it's good here, but the communication between military veterans and the department when they are asking for information, that's where, I mean, there is a lack. I don't know whether that can be fitted in here so that we know we are able to follow that. When military veterans have some concerns with the department, anyway, they get the response on time. Unlike now, where, I mean, we have some military veterans who wanted information as from last year, but up until now, they have not received, I mean, the response from the department. So I'm checking whether that can be, I mean, taken as a concern that the department must consider it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I thought we have it on the, can I just go on the previous discussion? Don't we have it, the thing that Mr. Sherem is raising?
Yesterday, you would recall, there was a long discussion around officials receiving inquiries, and then instead of, you know, taking it to the office, the government official in the department, they actually sent a letter back to the military veteran. He must again, from his side, then apply to the other official. So we had it covered here, but I can just make sure that it is included. And this is a very important point that I think should be maybe stays very strongly, Chair.
I agree with Mr. Shelembe. The turnaround time in terms of the regulation, that they must respond within 30 days.
Yes.
So and what they don't, if in actual fact they don't do that, and even when they do, you know, they don't advise the applicant that he or she can appeal to the appeals to the appeal board. Right?
Yes,
we covered that in some minutes. Can you bring it up in this report, Peter?
Yes, sir. I've got that. I think it's maybe in the minutes. Just drop a relevant observation and recommendation, sir. It's 30 days. I think it was the regulation 15 or something like that. They stays in 30 days, and if they don't get joined, then they can actually go and appeal to the appeal board, sir.
Correct, yeah. Correct. Shall I buy you covered?
No, yes, I'm covered.
Awesome. And, now, colleagues, are we happy with the report? Yes, can I get a move on?
I move to the
hospital.
I second.
I should have a second. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Can we move to the entities?
Sure, I'm just sharing all scores, observations, and recommendations. Is it visible on your side?
It is visible. Over to you, Fanny.
All right, thanks, Chair. Again, the same thing. We just highlighted the new observations and recommendations in yellow. We also included a new short paragraph on OMSCORE screen audit findings by the AG. The first observation is just an addition to an existing observation. I will read it in full. Specific concerns were raised by members around the ongoing delays with regards to projects that were placed there that leads to questions on the ongoing viability of the project. The committee took note of OMSCORE's indication that options around the way forward have been presented to the Minister of Defence and concrete decisions will be made at the next Armaments Acquisition Council meeting chaired by the Minister. Two down from that. Members recall previous commitments by Armsco that due to financial constraints, you do not pay bonuses for senior management from 2020-21. Members noted that bonuses paid in 2019-20 was based on existing contractual agreements, and the payment of bonuses was approved by the Armsco board. Three down from that, the last four bullets are the new additions. Members noted that previous spending on consultants came at a significant cost, and that the implementation of revenue generation initiatives identified by such consultants are slow to show results. The committee welcomed the announcement that Project Barrow and Natal are fully funded, despite indications by the DOD's CFO that funding is not available. The committee will continue to monitor these projects closely. The committee noted that there were currently no public-private partnerships involving Arms Corps, but that service level agreements have been signed with other state entities such as the South African Police Service. And lastly, the committee received an explanation as to the legal claims against the entity and will continue to monitor progress in this regard. In terms of recommendations, the first additional recommendation is the committee congratulates Arms Corps on achieving a clean audit from the AG for 2019-20. Relates to Project Refaster. I'll read it in full. The DOD, Arms Corps, and NAL should jointly reevaluate the feasibility of Project Refaster and present the committee with a way forward. Key to the outcome should be a focus on the SANDF capability as well as fiscal stability. And then the addition, the Minister, subsequent to the Armaments Acquisition Council meeting, where a decision was taken in this regard, should provide written feedback following its next meeting. We go to the bottom. There are two additional recommendations. The committee urges Arms Corps to be fiscally responsible and, in the context of current financial constraints, maintain its undertaking that it will not pay bonuses in 2020-21. And lastly, the committee welcomes the appointment of the new Arms Corps board and urges the board to ensure the sustainability of Arms Corps, the promotion of the broader defense industry, and the provision of quality service to its main clients, the DOD. Many of the observations, Chair, were already captured in the recommendations, so these are the only additional recommendations that we made.
Okay, colleagues, discussion. Can you go back to the first recommendation? No, it's the second one. It's the second one. Yeah, that one, yeah.
Chair, I think there's a typing error here that last bit of the statement should be deleted.
See, we are joining the three entities, DOD, Arms Corps, and DNL, to jointly re-evaluate of Project Wooster and present the committee with the way forward. And why are we bringing in the minister?
Sir, the minister is the Armaments Acquisition Council, and that's where the decision on the feasibility and the way forward of this project will be made. So Arms Corps told us that that will be the almost the final decision on the way forward, and she's the head of this council.
Oh, I see.
And also, she's also the executive person responsible, and we know that this is a decision that must be taken on a high level,
okay,
involving those three entities, DOD, Arms Corps, and NAL.
Okay.
So I'm very comfortable with that.
All right. Okay. All right, so just make that slight correction and rather than provide written feedback in the next quarter or in the first quarter of the year. When is the meeting going to take place? Because we can't pin them to do it in the next quarter when the meeting will not sit in the next quarter.
Yes, sir, they didn't indicate an exact date, so I think we should just make the recommendation that immediately following the meeting, they should provide written feedback.
Oh, that's fine. All right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm going to do that. Colette, any other?
This
is just a bit.
Yes. I'm checking whether it is in our mandate as a committee to recommend that the senior officials should not get the bonuses, or it is the mandate of the minister, because I'm trying to see now where they are saying the committee, emphasized that the senior officials must not get the bonuses. I don't know whether this is within our mandate to put it in here, or we're just saying that now. I mean, I don't know. Chairperson, I'm looking at that, whether it is within our mandate or not.
It's absolutely within our mandate, and it's also in terms of what they have committed to the committee on record.
Tell me, what did they say in response to your question, Mr. Mare? I know that the 90-20 was already committed.
Yeah, I have.
The 2021 is they came forward as part of mitigating measure to say that they undertook not to pay bonuses
and salary increases to the senior management. Yes.
Yeah,
so that's on record.
Yeah. Yeah, it's on record.
That's also on the PMG. That's also in the PMG records.
All right, it's the undertaking they made. I understand exactly where you're coming from, Mr. Chairman, but in this case, they made this undertaking. So we are asking the record of it.
And it was the CEO and the CFO.
Correct, yeah. Both of them committed themselves to it. All right. And all right.
Nothing from my side, sir.
And it doesn't look like there's anything. I don't see any hand on the system. All right, colleagues, may I get a move subject to the
amendment? I second,
Chair.
Good morning, Sandra.
Good morning, Chair.
Thank you so much. All right, colleagues, let's go to the next one, CCB.
Chair, can everybody see the slide?
Yes.
Page 36.
I can see it on this side.
Chair, just by way of introduction, do you recall that we've engaged the preliminary panel report of the CCB? Subsequent to that, they actually sent them a set of questions which they've answered. And then they presented their annual report. So these issues have been covered well. So what one finds out is that there's only one additional observation, and that is there on page 26G. And he says there that the committee noted the remarks by the CCB that the year under review was the first time that the office of the AG ordered the entity, as opposed to private intermediaries who performed it in the past. So, or the past or the previous 6 years. And so, the recommendation in that regard is that the committee urged the CCB to address the order challenges as pointed out by the AG, as it should not matter who orders them, in that they have to ensure that their submitted reports meet the expected requirements and standards, especially given that they are a relatively small entity that is operating with a relatively small budget. So, Chair, those are the only two additions that have been made with regards to the CCB.
Thank you so much. I remember this one very well. And colleagues, any other? Sorry, wait a minute. What am I saying now? Colleagues, are we happy with the report?
No, I'm happy on my side, Chairperson.
Any second?
I second, Chair.
Thank you so much. I did not get the voice. Who's that? Is the Kwasi?
No.
The Kwasi, Chair.
Oh, the Kwasi. Thank you so much. the report has been adopted. Are we done? I think you're done with the report. Thank you so much, Venem, Tim, Venem, Venem, Peter, and Brian. Can we move to the second report? I'm looking at the ANC colleagues on the thing. Are you happy, my colleagues, to put it on the agenda, the Khoisan thing?
I don't have a picture.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Thank you so much. And can we discuss the Khoisan is on the agenda, report? And can you permit and take us through? It's going to be very late.
Sir, is it visible on your side?
It is visible, sir.
All right, sir. I'll keep it broad. I'm not going to read the entire report, so I'll just give a broad overview of what we tried to achieve with the, in terms of the report. So the report tries to capture, in terms of the overview here, the report looks at the engagement between the committee and the
Freedom, can you eliminate that thing on the side so that you enlarge the thing? The slide.
No, that's right.
Yes, that one. Yeah. Eliminate the front. Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. So, Chair and members, the report tries to capture the engagement between the committee and the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit, and a little bit before that, all the interim engagement between the committee and the NDP. And then as well, the engagement between the committee and the SACC Military Veterans Association, because of the overlap in the members that these two entities claim to represent. In terms of the outline of the report, there's an introduction and a background to the integration process. The case of the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit, I think Section 4 is important. We'll go to that in detail. Efforts by the committee to positively engage the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit. Then also lastly, capturing the engagement with the SACC MBA, and then observations and recommendations. I'll just scan through it quickly and perhaps highlight key issues. Firstly, the aim of the report, perhaps just to go through that. The aim of the report is to provide an overview of the PCDMV engagements with the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit. It contextualizes the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit's request to the committee by providing a background to the integration process. It highlights concerns raised by the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit, as well as by members of the committee, and aims to propose a way forward in dealing with the plight of former SACC members. The committee engaged with the SACC MBA was based on the overlap between the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit and the SACC MBA membership, as well as the SACC MBA's request for an audience with the committee to raise their concerns and request its assistance to address these concerns. There's a quick outline of the process, the three engagements that was had, and then there's a background to the integration process. This stems from the research document that was presented to the committee on background research on, just to provide an overview of what the actual integration process looked like. The reason for including this, Chair and members, was because the claim of the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit is for their members that they represent to be integrated into the SNDF. So for any discussion around possible integration, it was important to look at the actual integration process around 1994. So this provided an overview of that integration process. I think importantly here is the issue around the integration, that there was an integration process, that there was flexibility around the integration process, that there were several checks and balances built into the integration process. There was also
parallel process of demobilization, and the demobilization, according to the Demobilization Act, focused specifically on non-statutory force members, and didn't apply to statutory force members, which former SACC members form part of. In terms of the systems of checks and balances that were in place, there were negotiations that took place around the integration process. There were placement boards in place that consisted of members of the old SADF and of the non-statutory force members. The whole process was overseen by the BMAT teams, which is the British Military Advisory Teams. And then there was also the Integration Oversight Committee that was established as a subcommittee of Parliament that looked at the oversight, the integration process. So that was just to take the background picture, members, of the integration process. And then we get to the case of the Khoisan Nation. And it starts off by pointing out that if you look at the literature that exists on the integration process, there is no mention of an entity called the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit. Then there was also a briefing to Parliament by... this was a pre-advisor of the Department of Defense, which says, and of course the Nation Self-Defense Unit did not exist back during the integration process. There's also a reference to the court case that was raised during the briefing to the committee. So the rest of this paragraph just provides an overview of the claim of the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit and the fact that they claim to represent a group of former SACC members that is seeking integration into the SADF. Now, the engagements between the committee and the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit, there were initial deliberations on the 22nd of May 2020. Here, there was a briefing by myself as the researcher of the background of the integration process. And the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit was supposed to brief the committee on that day, but due to some technical challenges, they could not access the virtual platform. There was also a briefing by the Parliamentary Legal Advisor on the history of the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit's request to integrate into the SNF. And he referred specifically to the High Court matter of Stanley George Mathia of the Khoisan Kingdom All People Party versus the Minister of Defense, and the Public Protector's report based on the complaints received by the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit. And in both these cases, the claims were not upheld. The next section deals with that. I think importantly as well is to capture in section 4.2 the engagement on the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit personnel list. And while the engagements were ongoing between the committee and the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit officially in meetings, there was also a lot of work behind the scenes to actually refine the claim or the request by the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit. Originally, they submitted a very long list with thousands of names on this list, claiming that these people are eligible for integration. It was ultimately realized through communication that there's major problems with this list, but they vaulted the list down to about 713 former SACC members that they claim that they say have a claim to integration. The list of 713 SACC members missing. So these people would not have a claim to integration because they served past 1994 in the new SANDF. So in essence, they were integrated and part of the new SANDF. Another 42 members left the service in 1992. This reflects that they had contracts at the time that came to an end in 1992, which coincided with the disbandment of the SACC. Another 38 members on the list left the service in 1993 after having started in 1991, which means again that they served the 2-year contract terms at the time. So there were a number of problems with this with the list, and the actual final figures show that the majority of the 713, except the ones that was just mentioned, the majority of them left the service of the SADF well before 1992, and therefore that brings into question that claim for integration. Then there was the engagement with the Khoisan National Self-Defense Unit on the 11th of November 2020. This was the meeting that members attended. And here we just recapture some of the minutes from this meeting and some of the discussions and observations that members will recall was made during this day. There's also on this day, without going into too much detail, the engagement with the SACC MBA. Mr. Arndt selected the presentation to the committee and members' engagement on who they represent and their troubles with the Department of Military Veterans and ensuring benefits and access of former SACC members to the Department of Military Veterans. I think most importantly, Chair, as we get to the last section, Section 6, it relates to observations and recommendations, and I'll go in detail through this one. So in terms of the observations, firstly, acknowledgement of the main Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit request. I think that's important to capture as an observation. The committee acknowledged that the main request from the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit is for a legal framework or a bill to be drafted to ensure the integration of those represented by the entity into the SANF, notably former SACC members. This request framed the discussions between the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit and the committee. That, I think it's very important to put that up front. That was their request, is for a bill to be drafted for integration. Secondly, clarity on the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit representation. The committee notes challenges around the representation claims of the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit. While initial personnel submitted to the committee laid claim to thousands of individuals being put forward for integration, the final revised list submitted by the entity revealed that it acted on behalf of 713 former SACC members claiming integration. The legal basis for integration. The committee observed the importance of the Transitional Executive Council Act, number 151 of 1993. And the specific requirements it laid out for integration of military forces. The committee also notes the establishment of the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit, which is only in June 2014, and that this establishment date excludes it as a collective entity from any rights provided for under the Transitional Executive Council. And members may recall that quote in the report by the defense legal advisor saying that the integration process was not on behalf of individuals, but on behalf of forces. So the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit did not exist during the time of integration, as they were only established in June 2014. The next observation, acknowledging contractual status of SACC members, the committee notes that the majority of the 713 individuals, as per the refined Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit personnel list, left the employer of the SADF prior to 1992. At least 172 individuals on the list served in or beyond 1994, thus excluding them from any claims to integration. Furthermore, at least 42 members left the service in 1992, serving either from 1990 or 1991. This reflects a 2-year contract coming to an end in 1992, which coincided with the disbandment of the SACC. At least 38 other members on the list left the service in 1993 after having started their service in 1991. This reflects adherence to the contracting period entered into between the SACC members and the SADF. Simply put, members, There's a group within the 713, there's a group of its former SACC members that clearly had 2-year contracts, and these were not shortened due to the integration process. You could see from the data that these SACC members served out the 2-year contracts, after which their contracts were not renewed. Furthermore, the next observation, voluntary service of the SACC, the committee further notes the concession by the KNSBU that SACC members served in the South African Defence Force on a voluntary basis. They were not permanent members of the force. The committee agreed that this further limits their claim for integration. And that was one of the discussions during the engagement. Next, the existing findings. The committee takes note of the North Gauteng High Court case that dismissed claims for integration of former Khoisan soldiers. The committee also acknowledges the public protector's findings that the refusal of the SANDF to integrate the members of the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit into the SANDF was lawfully justified. The committee is also cognizant of the Termination of Integration Act that brought to an end the integration process. Late-stage integration is the next observation. The committee notes that given the SANDF's current constraints in terms of rejuvenation, any integration of former SACC members into the SANDF would not be feasible more than 20 years after the integration process was completed. The next observation, the need for assistance to military veterans. The committee acknowledges the need for former SACC members as part of the broader legitimate military veterans community to be eligible for support from the DMV. Lastly, relations between the DMV and the SACC MBA. The committee notes with concern the claims by the SACC MBA that it is being sidelined by the DMV and SAMBA. To put these into recommendations then, members, the first main recommendation refers to the main claim by the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit, as members will recall, that was the drafting of the bill to ensure the integration of those they represent. So the first recommendation is in this regard relates to integration. And the committee acknowledges that the main request from the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit relates to the integration of those it represents into the SANDF. And then crucially, the PCDMV does not find any justification for the reopening of the integration process to accommodate former SACC members, including those represented by the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit. This finding is based on a number of aspects, including the guiding legal principle at the time of integration, notably the Transitional Executive Council Act, legal findings by the North Gauteng High Court, recommendations by the Public Protector, the committee's own concerns raised around the Khoisan Nation personnel list, contracting between the SACC members and the SANDF at the time, the fact that most SACC members on the Khoisan Nation personnel list left the employ of the SANDF all before 1992, and further observations noted by members of the committee contained in section 6.1. The second recommendation flows from this. While the committee does not recommend the reopening of the integration process, the committee urges all former SACC members, including those represented by the Khoisan Nation, to approach the DMV to be registered as military veterans on the database. Based on this registration, deserving military veterans will be allowed to access benefits through the department, thus providing necessary assistance to military veterans in need. Thirdly, cooperation to assist SACC veterans. The committee urges closer cooperation between the Khoisan Nation Self-Defense Unit and SACC MBA to ensure all former SACC members receive adequate representation at the DMV. The committee further encourages the SACC MBA, SAMBA, and the Department of Military Veterans to strengthen cooperation to ensure that services are provided to former SACC members. Second from what? Responsiveness from the DMV. The DMV is urged to ensure a quick turnaround time on applications from military veterans, including from SACC members. Efforts to finalize the military veterans database should be announced. Lastly, just a word of gratitude from the committee, from the com- obviously to the DoD for assistance in the verification on the names submitted by the Coordination Self-Defense Unit to the Portfolio Committee. Just in summary, perhaps an observation, Chair, the recommendations are structured in such a way that while the main finding of the integration main finding of the report is that integration, the reopening of integration is not justified, this does not leave these former military veterans without hope, because the report then recommends that these former SACC members approach the Department of Military Veterans and if they are legitimate military veterans, there should be space for them to be included on the military veterans database, and they can seek assistance in that through that channel. That's it for my side, Chair. So open to discussion.
Thank you very much, colleagues. This is the judgment. And can I? Is there any correction you want to expect to this ruling? Colleagues, are you comfortable with this ruling?
Chairperson, I've read through it last night when we received it, and I've gone through it this morning again. I think it is a great report. In my opinion, all the angles have been captured and all the viewpoints have been captured, and I think it's a great report. I know it's probably not exactly what they want, but I think from an accountable point of view, I think it is a great report, and I am 100% in support of this report. This is the only option that we can go at the moment, and I cannot see anything else, but I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Thank you so much. What is critical is that we listen to them, we weigh the evidence, and then made our own findings based on what was presented before us, and we've done justice to the matter. It's not like it was a, you know, pressure-cooked stuff. Colleagues, are there any comments? And can I get concurrence? Mr. Schoenberg, you ready up?
Yes, Mr. President. There was something that might be not relevant in this report, but I'm just checking whether it's true that there was a sort of a meeting that was held between the deputy president and these Amini units. You know, if it is true, what will be the implications on that report? I mean, looking to put a discussion ahead, if they did have that meeting. I'm checking with you whether that meeting did take place, and is there anything we can get out of it, what was discussed in that meeting? Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes. No, there was a meeting. I'm not too sure if the SACC MVA was part of the meeting, but nothing. There's nothing conclusive thus far. I think it's work in progress. And in this situation, we're responding to the presentation that was made before us. And I think I don't think this will impact on that process. Even if it does, I think this will enhance the deputy president process. Hence, I thought we must finalize this, take it to parliament so that he too can have access to this document. Any other comments? Right, can I get you moving?
Can I move?
Mafanya moves.
Second.
Any objection? No objection. Thank you so much. Well done, Reverend and the team. And right, the last item, colleagues, I'm not asking you to decide on it, but we're just flagging it. And Brian, can you put the you know, it's not even a draft program, items to be considered in the new year. The list is not exhaustive. Those are just follow-ups from the last from the last financial year, from this year, basically. And we just preface your presentation with the notes you gave me about the guidelines and the framework.
Morning, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Chair, what we have here is a list of the items that we had identified for our first term in 2021. The challenge, Chair, that we had is that the parliamentary framework is not yet available, which would assist us to know the date from when Parliament would be expected to commence with its work. Hence, we were unable then to put together a program that has dates and everything. And in addition to that, the guidelines that are normally published by the Office of the Health Chair, pointing out the focus areas for the new year, have not yet been published by the Office of the House Chair. Hence, this is just a list of the items that we had identified for next year. We are still to be guided by the parliamentary program framework, as well as the House Chair's focus areas for the next term. Just to go through, Chair, the items, we thought that perhaps at the beginning of next year, a strategic planning session would be held by the committee to commence its work for the year, which would be over 2 days. Then thereafter, the first meeting, that would be a workshop, that strategic planning session. And then the first formal meeting of the committee would then deal with the consideration and adoption of the 2021 first term program. Thereafter, also deal with the DOD on the HR action plan and measures put in place to contain the budget over expenditure. Even follow up with the DOD on the National Treasury on the implementation and funding of the HR plan and measures to develop and fund a human exit mechanism to ensure force rejuvenation. Then the next item would be a briefing by the Advisory Council of Military Veterans on its report for the term. So I would remember that the term of the Advisory Council of the Military Veterans is coming to an end, and that they sent us their report for the term as required by legislation. The briefing by the DMV on the progress on the finalization of the National Database of Military Veterans, a meeting with SAMVA on its functioning, the briefing by the Appeals Board on its functioning, that would be a follow-up meeting, the briefing by the DOD on the quarterly report, as well as the DMV on its quarterly report, a briefing by the DOD on its audit action committee and internal audit on measures to detect and prevent financial irregularities. The same meeting then with the DMV on the audit committee and the internal audit on measures to detect and to prevent financial irregularities. So far, Chair, those were the items, but then there's also other issues that I have flagged from the reports that we have just adopted, which would then also be factored into the program. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, these are the thematic areas for next year. Are there any we're just throwing into the pot? All right. And we'll then process them and produce a program for each of the four quarters, from each of the four quarters. Can I get your reaction, colleagues?
Chairperson, from my side, I think this is a good start for the new year. We know that there will be variables that will impact and influence that, but I think as a proposal for the year to give us guidance in terms of how we start, I think it's good, and I think we have to go with that. And we know that we are flexible. If there are other matters that comes up that is more urgent, then we will have to. Adapt to that as well. We must be flexible, and I am comfortable with what you and the team have put together. So thank you very much. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much. What's your team done on it, Mr. Mare? We visited the borders, and we were taken to Mangosi, and we were shown what they are doing to stop the cars from being crossed over into Mozambique, and they're installing jersey barriers there. And you recall that in the presentation they made earlier, they said they were putting borders in an attempt to stop the cars from crossing over. And then when the province of KwaZulu-Natal met with them, this idea came up, and they're now implementing it of installing jersey barriers. And it's a technology that is being implemented, and maybe there's a better technology out there in the market. And but I was happy that they are doing something. And I wished that this could be extended to all areas where these guys use as an escape route after they've stolen the cars. You recall that I think we were in. Yeah, it's Mozambique when we were told that 48 million rand, 11 months, we have not even finished the year, this year. And up from 24, 28 million rand in the last financial year. That's the total value of the cars that they recovered. We're not talking about those that they couldn't recover. And it may be more, far more. And so I then thought perhaps we should consider meeting. Inviting the province of KwaZulu-Natal, and in particular the Department of Transport, that is a lead department, on this, to come and talk to us about the value of this exercise early in the year. And one, and two, to also invite the, to invite, I don't know what is, to have a chat with the trucker industry, to invite them to come and talk to us about, this, to address us on this aspect, the stealing of vehicles and the smuggling thereof across across the board. Maybe we should also extend it to the insurance companies. And I want to know, it's one thing to express a concern, and I want to know what measures they are developing on their own to try and keep this, and keep this problem. And so in other words, I'm opening up a discussion. They may in fact actually say that, look, what KZN is coming, is initiated is a brilliant idea, and they want to partner with the government in rolling it out in other provinces as well, where they experience the same problem. And that will actually address the issue of funding if they can come on board, you know, because I mean, imagine the payouts that they made every year each time when there are these incidents. And coming to party and becoming part of this program, it will really save them a lot of money. I'm sure they may be excited about this. I don't know. They may have some other ideas, but let's engage. What I like about this Jesuit Berry thing again, it's one way of improving our fencing, even though it doesn't fence off, doesn't prevent people from crossing over. But at least you stop cars from being moved across one, and two, you can then regulate those acts. Access points by fence, the fence, the ordinary fence that they are putting up, and the usage of other force multipliers, drones, cameras, and so on and so forth. That, in my view, will go a long way in complementing the work that our guys on the ground, our soldiers on the ground, are doing. I mean, one Kenneth said, I have 172 members to cover a stretch of about 81 kilometers. You can see how impossible the task is. But with these general barriers coming in between, I'm sure it will help them a great deal. I'm not motivating for it, but I'm just motivating for a meeting. And all right, colleagues, are you happy that we must convene in the new year?
I think so, sir, because remember, we don't have to reinvent the wheel if the wheel has been reinvented already. And eventually, it's about what is in the best interest of South Africa. And right. If we can learn from each other, and maybe you know, other departments and the Defence Force can say, okay, we can use the principle and we can maybe improve on that, etc. You know, we might have a situation where in Limpopo, on the Zim border, you can't have the barriers with the spaces in between. But it might be, for some reason, acceptable in the north of KZN in terms of you know, the local populations and the tribes on both sides of the border. But I think the principle is that there's something constructive and concrete. Let's see how it came about, what is the successes, and whether that can be adapted. I know that, you know, in the rugged terrain in Komati Fort, it might be a bit different for the barriers, but it might work in other places. So I mean, we are not God's gift to mankind, and we have to work as a team in South Africa, because this is about the nation and not about egos of anybody.
Yeah. All right. Now, all right, colleagues. Can you, Brian, Willem, and Peter, attend to that? Start the first. Can who we must invite? Who in the industry, and whom we must invite from the tracker and the insurance industry, so that early in the year we're then able to have that meeting, and then slot it in with the government. Of course, Nadal will find a way of communicating with them to come and do the presentation. Colleagues, we were just flagging the matters, we're not deciding on them, and I'm still open to receive more items in writing. And then early in the year, we then produce the first draft. So, colleagues, any other comment before I thank you, colleagues? This is the last meeting, basically, of the committee for this year.
Chairperson, seeing that it's the last meeting, from my side, I mean, to you specifically, my absolute appreciation for the way that you've been chairing this meeting or our committee, and even the Joint Standing Committee on Defence. It has been, I think I've said it a couple of times, it's been a vast difference and an improvement from the previous parliament. So I can only express my appreciation to you. And obviously our team, our support staff, they've been outstanding. I mean, without exception, I do believe that in all my years in parliament, they are the best that I've experienced. So, you know, obviously the combination of the team, yourself, us, we are certainly working. So I wish you well over Christmas, all of our colleagues, and, you know, a blessed and a Merry Christmas. And we trust that everybody will recharge their batteries and, you know, be in this Christmas festival atmosphere with their families and loved ones. And that we can come back in January recharged and energized and take on the battles as we have done it this year. So I wish you well, and I say thank you, thank you, thank you. God bless you all.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moret, for those comments and compliments. Any other comment or remark?
The chairperson, can I give you my account number? I need money to buy a bride for Christmas.
Oh, I see. No problem. So take your heart. Thank you very much. I wish Mr. Mafanya, are you wanting to make a remark?
Not really. The colleague of ours that I don't see now these days. Where's that one?
Thank you very much. And colleagues, I'm very, you've been a wonderful team, and it's been a pleasure working with all of you. We chaired like as if we've been together for a very long time, and I think we've been able to learn the issues very fast, and I always say that it's difficult to oversight something that you have no information about. You have very little or nothing about. So in this instance, I can tell you that we have covered a lot of ground, that now we can speak on every matter with authority and with confidence. And so thanks to our support team that goes out, harvest the issues, process them, and place them before the meeting. That made our job much easier. And thank you very much to you, Brian, to Velem, and the thing. I wish all of you colleagues a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. The same thing that Mr. Mare said, go to church. We'll meet again in the new year, and thank you very much from my side. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. Merry Christmas to you all.
Thank you so much,
Sandra. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, the meeting is adjourned.